I'm interviewing Valerie Lind, and she is a very good family friend of mine. And we're going to talk about her coming to America along with growing up during the Second World War in England as a child. So, Miss Valerie, if you want to get us started.
Okay, well, I can't remember the beginning of World War II. It was 1939 for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 3 years old.
Of course.
I can remember my home where I lived. But I went to live with my grandmother and grandfather during the war in Northumberland near the Scottish border. And I was like an evacuee because you've heard about evacuees, mm-hmm. who came out of London and the big cities during World War II. So I called my grandmother and grandfather had two evacuees living with them who were working at some sort of secret base nearby. And my grandmother was rather a private person and she didn't like, I mean, most people were very welcoming them and doing their bit. And my grandmother and grandfather did their bit, but anyhow, I went to, in the end, we were living in Leeds, Bradford, fairly industrial area, but, and my father was already a partner in a firm of chartered accountants and he had, and I remember in my house though, sitting in the cellar at night when it was cold. And in the end, nothing ever happened. So my parents didn't bother going to the cellar at night.
Yeah.
And that's when the town where my father worked was bombed. But he didn't have a car at that time. He just took the bus. And it was only at the bus stop that people said, oh, it's bombed us.
Yeah.
So that was, anyhow, that. Happened.
Go ahead. Do you remember a bombing at all? Were you ever in an area where a bombing happened?
Yes, not much, but to move on, he joined the he was 30 years old, but he knew everybody he would have to go, so he joined the Royal Air Force,
mm-hmm.
which was more popular than the Army, I guess. Yeah. But that's so he joined in 1941, I think, trying to think. And then he was sent to Blackpool. I went with them. And that was more bombing in that part of the country than in Yorkshire. I remember, there were bombs. And not that I really, it didn't bother me. I remember there wasn't much food.
Yeah.
that's a bit that really... that's impressed me, but we did have bombs and I remember going on trains during the war, and when you got on the train, there was always, I'd travel with my grandmother to visit my other grandmother. I'd go with my maternal grandmother to visit my paternal grandmother, I was the only grandchild. I was the only grandchild on both sides, so.
Mm.
And she would, so, my grandmother wanted to see me and and we would travel. And I remember they didn't really like you traveling during the war, but they let you go, and we'd go and visit.
Mm.
And my father by that time was in Burma, I should tell. He had, and my mother had, this is not all, I'm sorry, I'm getting it out of order.
No, it's fine.
But my mother was a nurse before the war, an RN, and she joined what they called the VAD. It was a voluntary nursing group. And she went to, and there was a big stately home turned into a hospital by Earl Grey, of Earl Grey tea fame.
Yes.
And he was actually the great reformer in British history. He had sponsored his ancestor had brought about the great reform of 1830, where a lot more people got to vote. It wasn't as in America where everybody voted, but he'd been quite famous. And this was Earl Grey and Countess Grey that were opening their home up to be a hospital.
So both your parents served in the war in some way or
another? Oh, yes, yes. Well, and everybody, my father, well, you had to. I mean, it's... He wouldn't have escaped, but he volunteered. He knew he'd have to go.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather, anyhow, went to stay with my grandmother, and my mother was nursing nearby at this stately home that was turned into a convalescent home for troops.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed going there and, and visiting with the troops. And
of course.
They were not, well, I was just a little girl and mm-hmm. they sort of spoiled me. And we went, but we had tea with the nurse. The thing was, they had really nice food for the troops, you know, they should have. And there were cakes made with real butter and preserves. And
which were hard to come by.
Yes, you got margarine. You didn't get much of that. And you got, we had, I think it was like an ounce of fat, which was lard for us.
My goodness.
We didn't have corn oil or we didn't have liquid corn oil, but... It was and one egg per person per week.
And so you really had to be careful with what you made and
how you sorted. Well, anyhow, I went to visit my mother about most weekends, or she'd come in if it was her weekend off, and I took the bus. My grandfather put me on the bus, and I went to Howick Hall where Earl Grey lived, Earl Grey and Countess Grey lived, and my mother met me at the gate, and then we'd go, and she took me into the pantry sometimes and let me have a few raisins. But I mean, she didn't take much, but we're basically having this afternoon tea, and matron, you've heard of matron and sister. The matron was the head nurse, still called matron, and sister was a senior nurse. And then the rest of them, and they called each other by their surnames, I remember. My mother's best friend, never married, but we kept her in touch with her for years and years to come after the war. But anyhow, I used to sit with all the nurses and have tea, which was lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go fairly often. And I think some of the troops, one of them was saying, which nurse is your mother? And I was describing her. And they said, Blondie. And I said, she's not blonde, she's very nice. This is what they told my mother, I heard later, but I thought it was something
derogatory
they were saying about her. But anyhow, I remember those were very happy times. And we went and Earl, my mother liked Earl Grey was much more informal than Lady Grey.
Mm-hmm.
Although, because she was always, she was in her VAD, this nurse, the same uniform that my mother wore. They're very smart. And she actually, when I think of it, she was quite nice. And she took me to there was a pool near the stables. I don't know if you've seen them in, like, Downton Abbey and places like that. They had these big stables and they'd have a shallow pool and a rather nice architecture. And I went with her, with Lady Mary and Lady Diana to play.
Well, that's pretty exciting. Not many people can say that they've got to go play and swim at Countess Grey's house or estate.
Of course, I was just a little country girl, in those days, but I was a bit awed by them. But they were quite full of themselves. And I think they were... Well, they were of the arrows. They were used to being,
of course,
And I was a bit shy, and their father was, Sir Evelyn Baring, was Governor General of Kenya, and he was overseas at the time, but he founded Baring's Bank, which is quite a famous bank, and in the 90s, it was taken over by some young blades, and people were taking over banks, and they ran it to the ground. It went out of business. Mm-hmm. But that's the family they belonged to. And my mother thought Countess Grey was a little bit snobby.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she didn't. She only talked to doctors. She didn't speak to nurses.
Oh.
Well, yes, she was, but she was quite nice to me, I think, to take me to play with, And
absolutely.
But Earl Grey was a lot nicer, and he'd go out and he'd be gardening in his garden by himself, in his tweeds and things. He was gardening and he was very nice. And my mother took me to buy. We walked about the grounds. I was there several times and he was very nice. And I was so disappointed. Because I said, oh, I said he was, because he was in his old gardening tweeds. Mm. And my mother said, what do you expect he would wear, purple velvet and lace? I said, no, but I thought he'd be in evening dress.
Yes.
But anyhow, those are just sort of things that were, for me as a child, that, and mainly I think it was the food, that we're always short of food. That was, and it's a good job, because I think if I'd grown up with as much food as we have today, I'd have been, I was never good at controlling my appetite. So I think the shortage of food helped me.
In a sense.
In that way. Although my mother, I don't think my family would have let me eat too much, you know.
Mm.
But there's a lot of overweight children today, I think, and this, which is not good. But anyhow, I'm overweight now, but not then, right? Because I couldn't get enough food.
But well,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that, and so after the war, as you got older, you met David, obviously, and then you got to travel all over the world, and you lived in places like Pakistan, Iran, Germany. Could you talk about living in countries like that?
Yes, I'll talk about coming to America first.
Of course.
I met David, and the base at the time was actually doing something very secret, and he was a transportation officer, but he couldn't tell me what they were doing. But there were a lot of radio masts around, and all of us, it was very secretive, but we all guessed, because it was so easy to, it was listening, and I believe, and people later who didn't bother to keep it secret said they were listening in to Soviet news, you know, broadcasts, and it was part of the BMUs, the Ballistic Missile Early Warning System.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was an early warning system for the US. I don't think we would have had much warning in Britain, but we're very happy that the US was there to protect us, I can tell you that. And they did. So anyhow, when I left for, it was time for us to go back to the States, we were ready to go, and once we got married, they immediately sent us to another base and said we couldn't stay at this base where they're doing the secret work, because at the time they'd had the Cambridge, I don't know if you ever heard of the Cambridge Four. Well, they were sleepers who, when they were at Cambridge, had been recruited to the Soviet intelligence.
Oh.
And they had, the most famous was, I forgot his name. Anyhow, there was four of them. Oh, Burgess and MacLean were two of them who were homosexual, and they were, and that was a crime in those days in Britain, so they were blackmailed. And then there was another guy who was quite famous, whose name I've forgotten, and he was at the highest, he was at MI6, he was one of the leading people, and he was a Soviet spy right there in the middle of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And he was eventually discovered, but so at the time the Americans didn't like the British, because they had this guy, these people working at very high levels in intelligence who were Soviet spies from the 30s. So anyhow, that so when I married David, anyhow, they said we got to leave. And I mean, I'd been around this base and going to parties with David and all sorts of things. But anyhow, they sent us to a less secret place, a transportation base. And David was in the transportation corps, so we went to Liverpool. So we were ready to leave. It was time for him to go back to the US. His tour was over. And we were... And then things started heating up in Berlin. And at that time, the only way you could go to Berlin was through, you had to travel in a, you could go on the Autobahn, but you had to travel, it was rather restricted. And you could travel to West Berlin, you've heard about it.
Absolutely.
And you could travel at night, and I went on a train one time to later, but if you went on the American train, you traveled at night and you were coming into Potsdam in the morning, but by the time you got there, So anyhow, going back to leaving for America, the wall wasn't erected then, but the people in the Germans were giving us a lot of trouble in Berlin, mm-hmm. and they kept sort of postponing. They'd say, no, it's not, you know, it's not safe yet, or we can go. So in the end, they said yes. We got down to Southampton. I said goodbye to all my family, and we left on this. And I wanted to go on the like the United States or the America, the two.
Those are two boats.
Two shipping lines, okay. That you could, which were nice, you mm-hmm. know, very like going on the French line or the Cunard or somebody like that. But anyhow, the only one we got was the Navy troop ship, which mm-hmm. and there was no drinking in the Navy in America, mm-hmm. which is not that it's, you know, it didn't matter, but I mean, it wasn't exactly a beautiful cruise, but
absolutely.
We got there. We had nice food and it was exciting. But anyhow, they eventually said you can go down and get things had settled down in Berlin, and then we went. And we were going across the North Atlantic in October. We had a lot of rough weather. Mm-hmm. And I had my cat with me. Mm-hmm. And, and David said he had to go. And there was the only cat. And they shared this place up on the deck where the dogs and cats were. Had mm-hmm. a sort of air conditioning system that serviced both the cat and a dozen dogs, uh-huh. and the cat was terrified. I'd never do it again. And he said when he got the cat, he had to go out in his thick overcoat, and the cat got hold of the cat, and the cat's claws went right through it.
Right through.
I would never have done that. We did take the cat a few more places, but anyhow, the worst thing that happened, we lost all radio, radio silence, because the it was the Cuban missile situation.
So you were crossing the Atlantic right as
when President Kennedy called.
You're kidding. Yes. were crossing right as that happened.
Yes, and it was right as it happened. Mm-hmm. But we had radio. I think the people on the boat, you know, the commander, we didn't know. We knew something was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And anyhow, I was so... I wanted to go to America, but I... Excuse me, I'm going to have a drink of water. But I was feeling so upset leaving my home, and I never knew, didn't know when I'd see my family again. And I just sort of was not as worried as I should have been. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, so we had to start zigzagging, mm-hmm. which is what you do when, you know, when you're in a difficult situation, yes. at sea. And nobody knew if it was going to be World War III or what was going to happen, because... Mm-hmm.
So what year was this, just for...
This was 1962.
Okay.
And anyhow, President Kennedy did... I think he had a pretty... Apart from being assassinated, which was awful, but he had a pretty hard time.
He did.
He had to make some tough decisions.
And being assassinated did not help.
Yes, well, that... But anyhow, he... and he had the Bay of Pigs was already
mm-hmm.
over, Anyhow, he was he had to make the decision to stop the Russians from bringing. They were bringing arms to Cuba. They'd taken photos. They'd seen it from aerial photography, and he stopped them from.
Yes.
So it was pretty tense times. So anyhow, we eventually get there, and there's all this weather, and everyone's seasick. We came down, and I think the first sight of land was Rhode Island. We came mm-hmm. down the coast of Rhode Island. So I did came in past the Statue of Liberty and the boat docked to Brooklyn.
Okay.
And
that was your first step into America.
Yes, yes. So I'll move on. We get to the base. David was sent to Fort Eustis, which was the headquarters of the Transportation
Corps. And where was that?
And that's in Virginia, okay. near Hampton and near Norfolk. It was a big Navy place, but there's Oh, there's Fort Monroe was another, was the main army fort near there. Mm-hmm. And so anyhow, we get there and there's nobody there, but there's all these women and children, and you know, there's people on the base. And the husbands have said, well, they're all off, because the crisis was over, but they were still down in the, they'd gone down to stage in the Dominican Republic, mm-hmm. the Transportation Corps. And they had, and the Transportation Corps had those landing, you know, what, those landing crafts, mm-hmm. and they made them appear at, so anyhow, they and Hit the Beach was their motto of the battalion that he joined at that time. So anyhow, we got there and eventually they all came home, but it'd been a tense time for everybody. And it, and of course, it, the whole period was very dangerous. And we all thought, you know, I think eventually they got both the Soviet Union and America had started disarming, and anyhow, that's that. And then I went to, so the next thing we had to do was, I got my citizenship very early, mm-hmm. because they figured in case I got over, David was sent overseas and we were in a bad spot, if I had American citizenship, it would...
So what was that like, studying?
And... So I studied. It was like high school civics for you. Mm-hmm. David said, oh, this is good. You know, he's going through his high school civics class again. Yeah. And it was, and then we had a, then we had to have a test, an oral test. Mm-hmm. And the only, it's easy, but I mean, I'd studied well, and you know, and I knew, and they, mine was what were the three main branches of government. Well, you know, that's not too hard, but
no.
But you had to know it all. There were a lot, anyhow, we, and I was the only British mm-hmm. wife, because most of the army wives were German. There were a lot of German wives that had married.
Mm-hmm.
American servicemen when they were stationed in Germany. There was one Japanese
mm-hmm.
woman, I remember. And I told her, my father was my only relative because my mother had died of cancer mm-hmm. by the time I, and my, this Japanese wife said, oh, how could you leave your father alone? But you know, how terrible, we'd never do that in Japan. Well, they wouldn't have left the father on his own. But I said, I think he'll, you know, he told me he'd probably get married again, and he was quite, which he did. So anyhow, we moved on, and I did go. So it was a good job I got my citizenship, as it mm-hmm. turned out, because in 1963, well, that's the year Kennedy was assassinated. We mm-hmm. all remember where we were when the, and I remember where I was when President Roosevelt died too.
Really?
Yes, yes.
Hmm.
Because it didn't.
Where were you?
I was having breakfast with my grandmother and grandfather. We'd, because in England, we didn't, it, the news came through in the morning. And my grandmother and grandfather were really shocked,
mm-hmm.
although he'd been ill for a while. But, and the only thing was, I remember it happened, and I understood, well, why can't we have our breakfast? Who is President Roosevelt anyhow? And I got into trouble for that, but mm-hmm. but I do remember it, so then I knew who he was. But so anyhow, we go to the next year, 64 was when David went to, we went to Pakistan,
mm-hmm.
and my daughter was born in November, and I couldn't travel, and David had to travel ahead of me, because they were, he had to leave in November, I think, and it turned out she was born early, but they didn't let you just, and he was in Virginia, and I had nowhere to go. My mother had died, and my aunt was sort of, was trying to help with the family business, mm-hmm. and I didn't have any. My mother had died, and my father had remarried, but I didn't know his new wife, and they only lived in a small house where, because mm-hmm. her parents were running a club. They had these clubs where you could drink in England, because you know they have pub hours.
Yes.
And they had hours where you have to go to a private club if you want to drink late, and
mm-hmm.
and you can go. They're quite legal and everything, but her parents are running this club, and she had a little cottage in the grounds, so she and my father lived there, but there's no room for me, and I just, so I just went, my sister-in-law let me stay, she was not married at the time, so I flew out to El Paso, but anyhow, we went to,
You were in Pakistan?
Yeah, so we went to Pakistan, but I had the baby, had my, okay, but I had Catherine before I went to Pakistan, because I couldn't, you couldn't travel within a certain time. So I was in New Mexico, where Catherine was born.
Okay.
And then, this is taking so roundabout. So we go off to Pakistan, which was, and most people hated it there, but I thought it was very exciting. I loved traveling, you know. I thought I'd died and gone to heaven, say, oh, I'm going to go and live in on the subcontinent.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting. There was some pretty nasty, you know, bad stuff.
What did you like about Pakistan?
Oh, I liked, well, I liked getting to know the people and getting to, and we, just the whole atmosphere. And we had, I'm trying to think, oh, we lived in the, we had a couple of houses, I remember, that we lived in. We lived in this guest house, and my partner, David lived in the guest house till I got there, and by that time he had a house. And then we eventually got another house. I had to look for a house by myself. Mm-hmm. That was a bit I didn't like, because it was so hard to find somewhere. I had a small child, and I think anyhow it was difficult to find a place to live, but I got, anyhow, we got a house. I think the army found us a house. So I thought it was so interesting, just, you know, because I'd never lived in a hot climate before for anything, and it was the third world, and there were things that there's tremendous poverty, and there were beggars on the streets, and a lot of them had made them, you know, broken a limb or bent, did something to make themselves suitable to be a beggar. Or a lot of them would.
Oh, so it was self-inflicted.
Yes, yes. Or their parents, or they. Well, one of the worst things was a lot of them had their tongues cut out, and they'd been tremendous. Well, I could tell, anyhow, and they'd always want you to say, oh, you know, they wanted to show you. I said, no, you know, just give them money. But these are horrible things. And
really?
Yes. And it was pretty grim, because after we heard about the partition of India, and it was...
Were you in Pakistan for the partition?
No, oh God, no. That was terrible. It was a terrible time. But we had, it was 1947, and Earl Mountbatten, who you may have heard of, he was the last viceroy, and he went out, and India had, you heard of Gandhi, I'm sure, and the Congress Party, and it was, you know, they knew that it was going to come, but Earl Mountbatten was trying to keep it together as one country, but the Muslims under Jinnah would not have it, and so they had partitioned. So they had all the Hindus in Pakistan had to go to India, and there were millions of people, and there were lots of Muslims in India that had to go, had to leave for Pakistan, and terrible riots and murders and stuff going on. It was, and slaughter on both sides. And they told us, so when we were in Pakistan, they had a skirmish with India while we were there. And they told us this, that not to, if anyone came and they'd come and cut your servants' throats, you know. And they said, if they come in and do that, just let them do it. Don't interfere. This is true. And
you were there for this?
Yes. Well, it didn't happen. I thought, well, I didn't go. We're in our homes, and there was a lot of rioting in the street. And we had been giving, what happened was America gave aid to Pakistan, military aid, and then they started giving military aid to India as well. And that's what set it off. And then there was bombing, you know, there were Indians coming over and bombing and sirens going off. It was like World War II, but mm-hmm. it was, anyhow, I didn't feel unsafe because I thought, well, this is a Muslim country and all my servants are Muslim. They're not going to, you know, yeah. we're not going to be a target. The only person in his throat that wanted to go, I'd be the only person that, mm-hmm. but they weren't, you know. So we stayed where we were, and I had Catherine anyhow, and I remember I didn't. And then they were talking about taking us all to the AID, the Agency for International Development, who had a compound, because we didn't have a base, we just had the embassy, you know, mm-hmm. and the AID, and and I thought, I hope we don't do that, because it was dreadful, with the water, because you had awful trouble keeping your water. You had to boil all your, every drop of water had to be boiled, and they only pumped it in once a day. Mm-hmm. The servant turned on the pump and got it on the roof, and then he just sat boiling water all day. Yeah. And then it got cold. But anyhow, it was difficult because we just had little parties on Friday night with our group, and we were the support group. We weren't part of the military mission on that particular tour, but we'd have, you know, little parties at people's houses. A lot of us got dysentery, which is pretty nasty if you've had it. We all had it at some time. You don't want to have that, but you knew we had something to treat it. You know, we had a dispensary. Anyhow.
So, and you said you also lived in Iran.
We lived in Iran
before the revolution, right?
Yes, thank goodness. And I wasn't taken hostage, but we went to live in Iran. That was before the revolution. And I'm sorry, I'm going to have a drink of water.
Please.
And it was in the time of this Shah, who seemed to be very popular, but...
Mm-hmm.
And he was, and the Ayatollah was Khomeini, who was the leader of the revolution. He was in exile in Paris at mm-hmm. the time. But anyhow, they were, there was a section. David was a military advisor working with the army, and there was another group called Genmish, who worked with the gendarmerie, with the police.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what was with the Tsars, with the Shah's police. And we would, but anyhow, that's much later. Well, to us, it was much later, but it was 1960. When did that happen? I'm trying to think.
Oh, I should know this too.
We should know it. It was like when they had the revolution. And.
But could you talk about living in Iran before the revolution? What was that? What was that like? I mean, that's
It was a lot nicer than Pakistan. They were not quite as, you know, it was much more
developed.
Yes, and and people were doing, and it was. The Shah, I mean, he was a sort of autocratic ruler, I guess, but he was doing a lot for the people,
mm-hmm.
and he was making sure the people that wove rugs, because they're all, you know, that made next to nothing, he was making sure they got larger wages, and
mm-hmm.
he was doing a lot of reforms.
So he was very progressive.
Yes, but not enough for the extreme
mm-hmm.
Muslims. They were Shiites in Pakistan. No, the Shiites in Iran too.
Mm-hmm.
In Pakistan, they had some of both. But we had nice house, and we lived on the economy, but we had to go and call on the ambassador. I remember the ambassador's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you can't believe this, but it was the day that, it was when Nixon was elected, because it was the presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to come through kind of, I didn't expect it to have been decided, I think when Nixon was elected the first time, it was a very,
Pay raise.
He was elected easily. But anyway, I went to call on the ambassador, and then I had to go and call on the ambassador. I hadn't been there that long, and they'd have groups of us to call on the ambassador's wife. And it was out, and it was my friends, well, the military group, and I had a friend and was very close to her at the time. Her husband was in the Air Force, but we're all advisors, and they went to the, so anyhow, I had to go and call on the ambassador's wife. And I always remember this. They said, you mustn't, there's nowhere to park, so you had to get a taxi.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, on no account, there's nowhere to park, and you mustn't be a minute early or a minute late. And mm-hmm. they had these women from the embassy who were high-powered sort of, or telling us what to do, and very proper, you know. But we went, and anyhow, I got there, and I got this taxi, and then the taxi driver says, oh, well, I don't know where the U.S. embassy is. Of course, they knew well enough where it was when they were attacking it, mm-hmm. you know. But anyhow, and there was a compound we used to go to, and it was nicer living than Pakistan, I'll tell you that. But anyhow, I wasn't too late, and eventually showed the taxi driver the way, which he was, and we went, and he dropped me off, and I was right on time, you know, and I went in, and so I was sitting around in a group, and the ambassador's wife was there, you know, it was fairly easy to talk to, but, and then she said, and I didn't realize, I felt so ignorant, I thought, oh, she said, aren't we glad the presidential election has turned out the way we wanted it to. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, because she was her husband was appointed by President Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought she was maybe a Democrat, but mm-hmm. she was a Republican, because she said the right person won. And then eventually she said, oh, Dick and Pat, was that we knew them in DC, and they're such sweet people, and they live with, mm-hmm. they're lovely. And President Nixon, of course, he didn't need to done all the things he did. I think it was with the Watergate and all of that, but because he was, but anyhow, that's a different topic. He won very easily. And
so we are like starting to run a little bit shorter on time. Is there anything that you would